What if your physical symptoms, your emotional struggles, or, even that lingering lower back pain you just can't seem to shake? What if they aren't actually biological hardware issues? What if they are, in fact, vibrational glitches in your body's software?
It really requires a profound shift in perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, we are so culturally conditioned to view ourselves as purely mechanical, biochemical machines.
Right.
Like if a part is broken, you cut it out or you numb it with chemicals.
Which makes total sense based on everything we are taught in basic biology. But we have a comprehensive briefing report on the desk today that completely challenges that mechanistic view.
It really does.
Yeah, it synthesizes clinical research, quantum physics concepts, and the philosophy behind biofield therapies.
Wow.
We're specifically looking into something called matrix energetics.
And I think our mission for this deep dive is to really separate the woo-woo from the peer-reviewed data, right?
Exactly. We want to understand the science behind what researchers are calling consciousness technology, to see how invisible energy might actually be influencing our physical healing.
But to even begin grasping how a glitch in your internal software can be fixed, we have to fundamentally redefine what the human body actually is.
Or have to look past the flesh and bone.
Right, past the blood and the bone, and step into the realm of invisible fields.
Well, let's start right there, actually, because the report points to a very specific moment in 1992 at a U.S. National Institutes of Health conference.
Yeah, a really pivotal moment.
It was. That was the moment scientists officially coined the term biofield, and they defined it as a massless, endogenously generated field that surrounds and permeates living bodies.
And the key word in their definition there is information.
Okay, how so?
Well, the biofield isn't just, like, a static aura. They explicitly noted it as a complex sea of energy that drives the transfer of data throughout our entire system.
So it's active.
Very active. It acts as the master communication network, contributing to our mental, emotional, physical, and even spiritual well-being.
You know, I read that definition and I immediately thought about how we treat our modern technology. Like, if your computer screen starts flashing a bizarre error message,
you don't try to fix the screen itself.
Right. You don't pull out a screwdriver and try to physically replace the glass monitor straight away. You understand that the hardware is just displaying a software problem.
Exactly.
So the physical symptom, that back pain or that sudden chronic fatigue, it might just be the error message flashing on the screen while the actual bug is in the vibration code.
That's a spot-on analogy.
But I really struggled with the physics of this. I mean, the NIH calls it a massless field that isn't strictly electromagnetic. So how do scientists even study, let alone agree upon, the existence of something that has no mass?
Well, the scientific pursuit of this invisible architecture goes back heaps further than 1992. Consider the pioneering work of Harold Saxon Burr in the mid-20th century.
Oh, right, the L fields.
Yes, L fields, or life fields. Burr proposed that these electrodynamic fields essentially serve as the energetic blueprint for the entire organism.
So rather than the physical cells deciding how to arrange in themselves, the field dictates the shape of the physical matter.
Exactly. Think of it like a magnetic mold. If you scatter iron filings onto a piece of paper and place a magnet underneath,
the filings instantly arrange themselves into a geometric pattern.
Right. The filings didn't decide to do that. The invisible magnetic field dictated their structure. And Burr theorized that our physical bodies arrange themselves according to this underlying L field blueprint.
Wow. So if that blueprint gets distorted by stress or trauma, the physical building, our body, eventually develops structural issues.
Spot on. And we see evidence of the body constantly trying to correct those structural issues energetically. Bjorn Nordenstrom developed a theory regarding biologically closed electrical circuits.
BCEC systems, right?
Yeah, BCEC systems. He found that when a tissue is injured, the trauma creates an immediate buildup of ions. This ionic shift literally creates and drives a healing electrical current directly to the site of the injury.
So the body is already using electrical currents to heal itself before the biochemistry even fully kicks in.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Traditional medicine is incredibly effective, but it operates almost entirely downstream in the biochemical realm.
Oh, I see.
Biofield therapy suggests that our thoughts, our repressed memories, and perhaps even our family history exist as trapped vibrations within this wider quantum blueprint.
As Nikola Tesla famously put it, if you want to find the secrets of the universe, think in terms of energy, frequency, and vibration.
Exactly.
But practically speaking, if our physical ailments are just the downstream effects of a distorted blueprint, how do we access that software? Like, how do we rewrite the code when a pattern gets stuck?
Well, the briefing report details a specific consciousness technology designed to do exactly that. It's known as the two-point method.
I found the history of this fascinating. The two-point method actually has its roots in ancient Hawaiian shamanic wisdom.
Yeah, it's quite ancient.
But then it was modernized and brought into a clinical framework in the late 1990s by Dr. Richard Bartlett through his work developing matrix energetics.
Right, Bartlett really codified it for modern practitioners.
I understand it's considered both a technique and, like, a way of living.
Mm-hmm.
But I need you to break down the actual mechanics for me. What does a practitioner actually do in a room with a client?
The physical act of the two-point method is remarkably simple, but that simplicity is strategic. The practitioner begins by identifying point A on the client's body.
Okay.
This point represents the physical or emotional tension. It is the physical manifestation of the stuck pattern, you know, the chronic pain or the limiting belief.
So they are physically touching the area of pain or the area where the emotional tension is held.
Often, yes.
Yeah.
Then they identify point B. The second point could be another location on the body, or it could simply be an empty point in the space surrounding the person.
An empty space.
Yeah, the literature refers to point B as a vector point. Once the practitioner holds their awareness on both points simultaneously, they drop their own consciousness into their heart, achieving a state of complete neutrality.
And then what happens?
Finally, they wait for what the technique calls collapsing the wave.
Okay, let me stop you right there, because collapsing the wave is heavy quantum physics terminology.
It is, yeah.
I always understood wave collapse as something that happens under highly controlled conditions in a particle accelerator, or, you know, when shooting lasers through a double slit.
Right, the classic double slit experiment.
Exactly. So how does a human being standing in a therapy room literally alter physics and collapse a quantum wave just by touching two points and feeling neutral?
It really comes down to the role of consciousness as the observer. In quantum mechanics, a particle exists in a state of superposition.
Like a wave of infinite probable outcomes.
Spot on. Yeah. It's a wave of probabilities until it is measured or observed. The act of observation is what forces that wave of probability to collapse into one single fixed reality.
Okay, I follow that.
In the context of the two-point method, the stuck physical or emotional pattern is essentially a collapsed wave that has become rigidly fixed.
It's locked into a state of disease or pain.
Correct. So by holding those two points and dropping into a state of pure neutrality, the practitioner is using their consciousness as a new observer.
Okay.
But here's the critical part. They aren't observing the client with the intention of fixing them.
Which feels completely counterintuitive to everything we know about therapy or medicine. I mean, the whole point of going to a practitioner is to get fixed, right?
You'd think so, but the report quotes Dr. Bartlett directly on this. He says that if you need a miracle, you are focusing on lack.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you are anchoring yourself to the reality of the problem. True shifts only occur in a state of no charge.
So if the practitioner projects a strong desire for a specific healing outcome,
they are just imposing their own rigid wave function onto the client. The two points, point A and point B, they're really just left brain training wheels.
Meaning they give the analytical brain a job to do so it gets out of the way.
Exactly. The conscious analytical mind is distracted by holding the physical points. This allows the deeper awareness to shift into a state of play and curiosity.
The literature frequently uses the word childlike, right?
Yes. By letting go of any need for a specific outcome, the rigid wave function of the illness uncollapses. It temporarily returns to a state of infinite probability.
Allowing the body's energy to spontaneously reconfigure itself into a new, healthier blueprint.
That's the goal.
You know, I was trying to wrap my head around this concept of neutrality, and it reminded me of untangling a delicate knotted necklace.
Well, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah, if you pull frantically on the chain because you need it untangled right now, the knot just tightens. Your forceful intention actually makes the problem worse.
You just lock it in further.
Exactly. You have to loosen your grip, stop forcing the agenda, and let the chain naturally unspool in your fingers.
That is a brilliant analogy. The physical reality of the knot responds to the lack of tension. But the mechanism that creates this lack of tension, this profound state of neutrality, it isn't located in the analytical brain.
Right.
And it isn't in the hands holding the two points. The engine driving this quantum unspooling is actually located in the chest.
The heart field. And I have to express some real skepticism here on behalf of anyone raised in the modern educational system.
I don't blame you.
We are taught that the brain is the ultimate, undisputed command center of the human experience. Everything begins and ends in the cranial vault. But this research asserts that the heart is actually running the show energetically.
It is a massive paradigm shift. But the physiological data behind this is undeniable. The heart isn't just a mechanical pump blindly pushing blood through vessels.
What else is it doing?
It possesses its own intrinsic nervous system, often referred to in neurocardiology as the heart brain. It contains roughly 40,000 neurons.
Wait, really? 40,000 neurons in the heart?
Yes. And crucially, its electromagnetic field is measurable up to several feet away from the body. That makes it approximately 5,000 times stronger than the electromagnetic field generated by the brain.
5,000 times stronger.
Yeah.
So energetically speaking, the brain is whispering while the heart is screaming with a megaphone.
Which is why the concept of heart-brain coherence is so foundational to these therapies. Coherence is achieved when a person engages in slow, heart-centered breathing.
And that syncs everything up.
Yeah, this specific rhythmic breathing synchronizes the brain waves with the rhythmic beating of the heart. The heart acts as the great physiological harmonizer.
So when a practitioner drops into their heart space during the two-point method, they shift their nervous system out of sympathetic fight or flight.
And into a profound state of parasympathetic safety.
The report takes this a step further, though. It moves from basic nervous system regulation into some wild physics. It introduces torsion field physics.
Yes, this is where it gets really interesting.
It describes a torsion field as a spin or twist energy, like a vortex. What exactly is a torsion field in the context of the human heart?
Well, in theoretical physics, torsion fields are generated by the angular momentum or spin of particles, unlike electromagnetic fields, which weaken over distance.
Torsion fields transcend our conventional laws of time and space.
They are theorized to, yes. Because of the spiral architecture of the heart muscle and the vortex-like flow of blood through its chambers, theoretical models suggest the human heart acts as a powerful torsion field generator.
So by achieving heart-brain coherence, the practitioner isn't just calming down. They're spinning up a torsion field that allows them to access that quantum sea of infinite potential we talked about earlier.
Exactly. It is that specific, profound energetic coherence that acts as the catalyst. It gives the client's biofield the safety and the energetic bandwidth required to reset its blueprint.
It sounds beautiful. Truly, describing a practitioner using the vortex of their heart to unspool a quantum knot of pain is poetic.
It really is.
But poetry doesn't usually hold up in a clinical setting or, you know, under a microscope. If we are separating the woo-woo from the peer-reviewed, I want to know what happens when these invisible fields are put to the test.
We actually have a surprisingly robust amount of clinical data to look at. The National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health, the NCCIH, has categorized over 200 different approaches to energy healing.
Right. The report outlines those categories. I saw hands-on modalities like Reiki or polarity therapy where there is physical contact.
And then no-touch therapies like external Qigong or pranic healing, where the practitioner works purely with intention from a distance.
They also include self-administered therapies, such as EFT tapping. That combines physical stimulation of meridian points with cognitive reframing.
And finally, technology-based approaches, which use biofeedback devices or pulsed electromagnetic fields to artificially generate the frequencies the body needs.
So where is the strongest evidence?
When researchers look across all these categories, the strongest, most consistent clinical data currently available is found in pain management and oncology symptom relief.
The oncology data is what really caught my attention. The studies show that biofield therapies consistently reduce self-reported pain intensity in chronic pain patients.
And they actually outperform sham treatments.
Meaning it's not just the placebo effect of having someone pay attention to you in a room.
Right. And the effects on objective biological markers in cancer wards are truly remarkable. High-quality studies investigating modalities like healing touch have shown significant positive effects on diurnal cortisol variability.
That is the body's primary stress hormone rhythm, isn't it?
Yes, and it usually becomes highly dysregulated during cancer treatments. More importantly, these therapies have demonstrated an increase in natural killer cell cytotoxicity.
Natural killer cells being the immune system's frontline defenders that actively seek out and destroy tumor cells.
Exactly.
So a practitioner drops into a neutral heart space, and the patient's immune system literally becomes more aggressive toward the cancer. We also see increased heart rate variability in these patients, indicating greater nervous system resilience.
It's incredible to see it quantified like that.
But I have to admit, as compelling as the clinical surveys are, you can always find a skeptic who will argue that human beings are suggestible. Like, if a patient feels less anxious, maybe they just like the practitioner's calming voice.
Is exactly why the preclinical lab findings blew my mind. Preclinical lab findings completely removed the subjective human element. A petri dish cannot experience a placebo effect.
Exactly. The report details experiments where practitioners of external Qigong directed energy at lab samples and actually inhibited the DNA synthesis of osteosarcoma, which are bone cancer cells.
They induced cellular suicide, known as apoptosis, in prostate, colorectal, and lung cancer cells isolated in a lab setting.
The source material also highlights profound microbial effects. Specific modalities have demonstrated the ability to inhibit the growth of E. coli bacteria in a controlled culture.
There are even studies showing that focused human intention can affect the decay rate, the half-life of radioactive isotopes.
Okay, I need you to explain the mechanics of that because it borders on science fiction. How does a human being focusing energy from across the room alter the DNA synthesis of a cancer cell?
It forces the scientific community to look for mechanisms beyond standard biochemical pathways. This is where the emerging research into mitochondrial function and photobiomodulation provides a very vital bridge.
Photobiomodulation being light therapy.
Yes. The data shows that applying specific frequencies of energy or light can physically interact with enzymes inside the cell.
Let's slow down and unpack the biology of that. What is the energy actually doing to the cell?
Think of the mitochondria as the power plant of your cell. Under stress, a molecule called nitric oxide binds to a critical enzyme in the mitochondria called cytochrome C oxidase. When nitric oxide binds to it, it essentially gums up the engine. The power plant stops producing energy efficiently. The research shows that specific frequencies of light and energy can literally knock that inhibitory nitric oxide molecule off the enzyme.
Unblocking the engine.
Precisely. Once the enzyme is freed, the mitochondria can suddenly produce massive amounts of ATP.
And ATP is the universal energy currency of the cell.
Spot on. When a cell has more ATP, it has the fuel required for rapid cellular repair, regeneration, and immune response.
So conventional medicine struggles to find one standard biological mechanism for all forms of energy healing.
Right, because it's so varied.
But tracking markers like increased ATP production or the activation of natural killer cells proves that there is an undeniable objective physical response to these informational fields.
The data speaks for itself.
Which naturally leads to the biggest question. If you can prove increased ATP production, and if you can literally shrink tumors in a petri dish, why isn't biofield therapy automatically prescribed alongside standard medications in every hospital in the world?
It is the ultimate clash of paradigms. The primary barrier to integrating these therapies into mainstream medicine is the lack of a universally accepted, biologically plausible mechanism within the conventional reductionist biomedical model.
Because Western medicine is built on isolating a single variable and measuring its chemical effect.
Exactly. Biofield therapies are holistic and nonlinear, which creates massive methodological challenges for researchers trying to design standard clinical trials.
The report highlights a few of these specific hurdles, and the dosing problem seems like a major one. Researchers literally do not know how to measure a dose of energy healing.
It's a huge issue for trial design.
Right. Like if I take aspirin, the dose is 500 milligrams. But in biofield therapy, is a dose measured by how many minutes the practitioner spends with you?
Or is it the frequency of the sessions over a month? Or is it the actual measurable strength of the practitioner's biofield?
Which introduces the deeply complex issue of practitioner calibration. In a standard pharmaceutical trial, a pill contains the exact same chemical compounds, regardless of who hands it to you.
But in a biofield trial, the skill, the emotional state, and the energetic coherence of the healer are massive variables that directly impact the outcome.
Trying to standardize this research sounds like trying to study the objective emotional impact of a guitar solo. But half the people playing the guitar are Jimi Hendrix, and the other half just bought their first acoustic guitar yesterday.
That is exactly the problem.
Yeah.
The baseline level of skill is entirely different, so of course the clinical data comes back looking messy and inconsistent.
So what's the solution?
Well, the researchers authoring this report agree with that assessment entirely. This is why the latest strategic recommendations suggest using physical sensors to calibrate practitioners before they are even allowed to participate in clinical trials.
Wow, really? What kind of sensors?
They propose using highly sensitive magnetometers to measure the baseline electromagnetic output of a practitioner's hands and heart. Science needs standardized testing to determine if a healer can consistently achieve a baseline criterion level of energetic output.
That makes total sense. The other massive hurdle is the concept of placebo controls. How do you do a double-blind placebo trial when the treatment is an invisible field of information?
Researchers are beginning to suggest a brilliant reframing of the placebo effect itself. In conventional pharmaceutical trials, the placebo effect is viewed as a nuisance.
A psychological illusion that needs to be mathematically subtracted so researchers can find the real chemical effect of the drug.
Exactly. But in the context of biofield therapies, researchers are proposing that the placebo effect is actually the mechanism of self-healing expectancy.
Meaning the profound belief that you're going to get better literally changes your biofield blueprint, which then rapidly alters your downstream biology.
The belief is the information that reprograms the software. Rather than trying to design trials that eliminate the placebo effect, modern holistic researchers are asking how we can use these modalities to intentionally trigger and harness the body's natural self-healing expectancy.
That is a brilliant shift in perspective.
It really is. This is why future research recommendations strongly emphasize whole systems approaches. Instead of just looking at whether a therapy reduced an isolated symptom like pain by 2 points on a scale, researchers want to expand sample sizes to elucidate the wider connections.
Like, does an improvement in heart rate variability directly mediate the reduction in a patient's depression?
Exactly. Furthermore, they want to track the cost-effectiveness of these modalities. If a hospital integrates biofield therapies and sees a measurable reduction in the length of patient hospital stays, that economic data becomes a very compelling argument for mainstream adoption.
Well, so what does this all mean for you listening to this right now? We've covered heaps of immense territory today.
We really have.
We started by exploring how the biofield isn't just a new age metaphor, but a scientifically measurable blueprint that dictates the structure and health of your physical body.
And we examine how consciousness technologies, particularly the two-point method, utilize the physics of the observer effect. By stepping into a state of pure neutrality, practitioners can uncollapse rigid waves of disease.
Taking ancient Hawaiian concepts and validating them with modern quantum mechanics.
Right. We saw how the human heart, projecting an electromagnetic field thousands of times stronger than the brain and potentially generating vast torsion fields, acts as the vital engine that drives this profound physiological coherence.
And we reviewed the mounting clinical and laboratory evidence. From altering the DNA synthesis of osteosarcoma in isolated petri dishes to activating natural killer cells in oncology wards.
The data proves these informational fields have objective biological impacts, even as the medical community works to solve the complex puzzle of standardizing human consciousness for clinical trials.
It is incredible to think about the practical, actionable insights we can pull from all this research. The briefing report makes it abundantly clear that you do not have to be a certified biofield practitioner or a theoretical physicist to start experimenting with this in your everyday life.
Absolutely not.
When you are facing a stuck pattern, whether that is a persistent physical ache, a recurring argument with your partner, or an emotional loop you just can't break, try observing the issue with genuine curiosity rather than harsh judgment.
That is the very essence of the practice. Drop the energetic charge. Shift your internal dialogue away from what is fundamentally wrong with me and how do I force this pain to stop? And instead ask, what is my field attempting to show me right now?
It is all about letting go of that tight, desperate grip on the knotted necklace.
Exactly. Let it unspool.
Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. We love taking these incredibly dense briefing reports and unpacking the practical, paradigm-shifting magic hidden within the data with you.
It is always a pleasure to explore the intersection of physics and healing together.
But before we go, we want to leave you with one final seed to mull over as you go about your day. We started this deep dive by talking about physical symptoms as glitches in your vibrational software. But if your oppressed memories, your limiting beliefs, and even your ancestral family history exists as a constantly vibrating field surrounding you, and if a simple shift in how you observe a problem can collapse that quantum wave into a completely new, healthier reality, what else in your immediate physical environment is silently responding to your hidden expectations right now?